comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. And here in the Western Hemisphere, we begin our trek across the nighttime. We'll get you through the first part of it here at the Kevin Smith Show. It is talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It is the show where you matter. We're here because you have a right to know. One of the things you have a right to know about is the fact that on our website we have a little test running. And that little test is we're giving away some videos for free. And the way you find those is you actually have to read the page. And I'm not being smart aleck about that. I'm getting a look here. But people just kind of stare at a page and it kind of go glassy-eyed and they don't read what's all on that page. Now, there's a link there that says KSS Freebies. And if you click that, you can download some stuff for free. I think there are two videos up there right now. But one of them, you can get it in iPhone, Android format, as well as Windows Media format. You can also, I think the second one is that way too, but if it's not, we'll check. We'll make sure you get it in Android format as well, and iPhone format as well. The K-Files is a great publication, and it's our free weekly publication. So if you're not getting it, you really ought to. I mean, it doesn't cost you anything. And it's got some great stuff in it, great articles, links to interesting videos, and inside information about what's going on here at the Kevin Smith Show. If you're not getting it, why not? There's no genius in being a mushroom. And if you're in the dark and you're just being fed that steady stream of crap out there, in mainstream media, well, you're a mushroom. They sit in the dark and feed on crap. But you don't have to. I mean, that's by choice. You can make a choice to move from mushroom land into light, and you can do that by subscribing to the K-Files. So click where it says K-Files and subscribe. You're going to get a confirmation email. It has a link in it that you have to use to confirm that you intended to subscribe, and once you do that, you're in, and you start receiving the K-Files each week, so be sure you do that. We have a new members community under development, and you know we have the members area right now. We have a new members community under development, and that means that we've got some really cool, neat stuff coming up. It should roll out here in a couple of weeks, we think, maybe sooner. And not only will you get everything that you had in the members area, but in addition to that, you'll be able to do friend requests and accept or reject friend requests, just like on Facebook. And you can share videos as well. Might be time to join before that price goes up. And it's going up. We'll be back with my guest, Robert Hastings, right after this. So do not go away. All right. right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And as I said just before we went to break, my guest this evening is Robert Hastings. Robert will be with us for this first hour, and you may remember Robert Hastings made history a few months ago when he sponsored a press conference at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., and had a number of former military people who had been assigned to nuclear missile sites and so forth. And you know, I mean, these missiles were under their control. And he had these people there who told the press about UFOs disrupting some operations or disrupting normal routine at some of these nuclear missile sites. He's been with us before. Robert, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you very much.
Robert, you were with us just before that press conference, just a few weeks before. And I must say, that press conference seems to have rattled the cages in mainstream media just a little bit, enough that they finally seem to have taken this kind of information a bit seriously for a change. And it's I thought it was a good change. What's your take on that?
Let me first say that I was a co-sponsor of the press conference with former Air Force Captain Bob Salas. He also was one of the participants who he was involved in a missile incident at Malmstrom Air Force Base in 1967. In any case, Bob and I were pleasantly surprised at the media reaction. There were literally thousands of articles and news stories worldwide about the press conference. CNN streamed it live. I'm hearing some interference in my earpiece. Are you hearing me okay?
We're hearing you fine. We're hearing no interference here.
Okay, I've got something going on in my ear here. In any case, Bob and I were, as I said, quite pleased by the response from the media to this. There was enough coverage worldwide. I mean, if you Google the press conference, you'll see thousands of hits, thousands of websites have covered it. So it really was a departure from the normal mainstream media response to UFOs, I'm happy to report. But at the same time, the major hitters like the New York Times, the Washington Post, Time Magazine and so on, they either panned it or ignored it altogether. So it wasn't a clean sweep by any means, but I think we made a dent. I'm sorry to report, however, that the buzz kind of died away fairly quickly, even though I made available sources, my ex-Air Force personnel to the media, anyone who wanted to interview them. To my knowledge, the number of media organizations that took us up on that and followed up with interviews were very slim, very few in number.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think, you know, it kind of shows a combination of pressures on the media. For one thing, now, this is just my read on that, but, you know, when you've got people whose hands, figuratively and in some cases quite literally, were on the launch controls saying UFOs have interfered with nuclear missile sites, and they come out in public and say it, it's not something the press can really get by with not noticing. The media
That's
right. has to kind of notice
story.
That.
There are documents that have been declassified via the Freedom of Information Act going back to 1948, which confirmed that UFOs have repeatedly maneuvered around, hovered above nuclear weapons sites ranging from weapons laboratories such as Los Alamos to the Nevada test site where weapons were tested to the weapons deployment sites such as the missile sites. It's across the board. It's gone on at every nuclear weapons base in America. We know that it went on in the former Soviet Union when documents became available in the early 90s after the USSR collapsed. Witnesses and records from the KGB, for example, confirmed that the same kinds of incidents were occurring over there during the Cold War, mysterious objects coming in and hovering above weapons and impacting their functionality in one way or the other. So whoever is doing all of this, it's a third party, an outside third party with technology. I think the most likely hypothesis is that these are beings from somewhere else, and they have been monitoring the arms race. They have been expressing either their concern or displeasure, or just trying to demonstrate the fact that they basically can control the weapons if they wish. And they've been sending that signal to Washington and Moscow now for 60 years or so.
When you were here with us before, you told us about an incident where I have to be honest, I had Robert Salas on as well. And, I may be remembering something he told us, but I know you'll know about it. But it was an incident where actually the missiles had to be retargeted after the incident because it had really messed up the targeting on these. Do you know about that?
That's correct. That's been reported at a number of different bases by various ex-Air Force personnel, launch officers, targeting officers. But I think Bob Salas was involved in an incident at Oscar Flight at Malmstrom Air Force Base. His former missile commander, now retired Colonel Frederick Mywald, has confirmed most of what Mr. Salas has said. Basically, a UFO hovered over the Oscar Flight Launch Control Facility. Either most or all of the missiles malfunctioned. The object raced away. Colonel Mywald has confirmed that they subsequently sent out a two-man security alert team to one of the missile sites, one of the 10 that they controlled, and the two-man security team raced back to the launch control facility scared to death because as they approached the missile silo that they were sent to, they saw either the same or a different UFO hovering above it. So all of that clearly indicates a UFO presence during this mass missile shutdown. Now, 4 years before Bob Salas went public with his knowledge of the Oscar Flight shutdown, I had previously interviewed a man named Bob Jamison, who was a missile targeting officer. And he told me, in 1992 that he was called out to respond to the Oscar Flight shutdown, that he was briefed at the missile maintenance hangar. All the targeting teams were told point blank that UFOs had been involved in the shutdown incident, that the targeting teams were to be kept at the missile maintenance hangar until all reports of UFO activity from the field had ceased, and then and only then would they be released to the field to bring up these missiles. And Bob Jamison rather said that yes, the targeting was disrupted. It had to be reset, as well as guidance and control systems in general. The hardware had to be replaced. Let me quickly say that when I talk, I am definitely getting feedback in my ear. So when we go to the first commercial, I'm going to hang up and you can call me back.
Okay. All right. And that may be the function of using a cell phone.
Okay.
That's one of the reasons we try to get people on landline.
Right.
Now this targeting getting messed up, is that some sort of a dangerous situation? Is it a threat, immediate threat to us, or what's the nature of that?
Well, I can only go by what I have been told by the people I've interviewed, and what they're saying essentially is that the missiles could not have found their targets had they been launched. But the way the missiles are set up, if the targeting is not in place, and if there's a guidance and control problem, then you get flashing light indicators in the missile console, on the missile console, and the missiles are essentially unlaunchable. No one in their right mind would launch a missile that its targeting has been disrupted because you have no idea where it's going to land. But so it was a threat from the Pentagon's point of view to the readiness of those number of missiles, whatever number in a given case. But as far as that being an immediate threat to, you know, anyone in the U.S., that's really not in the realm of likelihood, let's say.
In all of these incidents that have happened over the years, where UFOs have shown up at a nuclear missile site or a launch site, and have disrupted the targeting, and they've done some other things. They've caused some other kinds of issues as well. But in all that time, has there ever been a situation that really sort of went hot and really got dangerous for us?
Well, superficially, yes. Of all the witnesses I've interviewed over the years, only one, a former Minuteman missile launch officer named David Shure, who was at Minot Air Force Base, North Dakota, in 1966. He indicated to me that actually a UFO had apparently activated some number of his missiles. He was down in the launch capsule. He got a call from the security personnel at ground level describing this bright object moving from missile to missile to missile, instant start, instant stop, at high rates of speed. And as it hovered over a given missile, according to Shure, down in the launch capsule, they saw on the console that missile launch and or activate and prepare to launch. You know, every indication, according to their console, was that this missile was preparing for countdown. And once they shut that down and disrupted the launch sequence, it happened to another missile, then another missile, then another missile. We know from declassified KGB documents that virtually an identical incident occurred at Soviet Ukraine in October of 1982, where an object, a saucer-shaped craft, hovered over a Soviet missile base, intermediate-range tactical missile base, and basically for 15 seconds, some number of missiles were activated, and you know, the launch personnel in the capsule over there were frantic, but after 15 seconds, the anomaly ceased. Everything returned to normal. And just within the last year, I gave an interview to a Russian newspaper called Life. They had reopened this case. They had sought out and interviewed some of the Soviet military personnel who were involved in that, who confirmed what I just said and provided additional details. So the same kinds of things that Shure was describing, which seemed like someone who was trying to start World War III, apparently happened at least once in the Soviet Union. Now, Shure is of the opinion that whoever were aboard the UFO were not really trying to launch his missiles. He thought that there was some sort of scanning or monitoring process going on, and that these launch sequences were inadvertently triggered. An alternate scenario, which I think likely, is that whoever was aboard the UFO were simply demonstrating that they could activate launch sequence and missiles, probably knowing full well that they could shut them down on their own if the Air Force missileers didn't, just basically to scare the hell out of the Pentagon. And I think that's kind of what's going on, again, in the overview, in a larger sense. I think that whoever is aboard the UFOs are basically warning America and Russia that we're playing with fire by having nuclear weapons, by threatening to use them. And they're just trying to, you know, send a very pointed message to both the Pentagon and the Kremlin that, you know, this is really a very foolish situation in terms of the long-term survivability of mankind. And, you know, the environmental integrity of the planet would be severely impacted with radiation if in fact, there was a large-scale nuclear war. So I think whoever's aboard the UFOs are simply trying to get our government and the Russian government's attention.
Okay, I can see that. I mean, it certainly sends a message whether they intended to send one or not. It certainly sends messages when suddenly you don't have control of your missiles and someone else out there that you don't know but you can see their craft seems to have control of them. That sends messages. But now let me ask you a question that's pure. The answer to this question has to be pure speculation, I would think. But I'm going to ask you to speculate. Do you think they're getting the message?
Well, who knows, you know, how much impact this has had behind the scenes. Certainly the people that I'm talking to are at the field level. They're not high-level Pentagon analysts or policymakers. So who knows how this is being received and what response is resulting from these ongoing incidents. But it is a fact that we now have, you know, vastly fewer weapons because of our treaties with the Russians. We've downsized our nuclear arsenals over the last 20 years, 25 years. So that's a good thing, obviously. But, you know, there are still enough missiles online waiting to be launched, and certainly enough backup warheads that if diplomatic relations, if international relations between us and the Russians ever went south again and we did get to the brink of war, there's enough firepower even today to basically end human civilization or set us back dramatically. So we're not out of the woods yet by any means.
Yeah, it was explained to me this way, and I can't vouch for the accuracy of this, but I was told before everyone starts celebrating that we've drastically downsized our arsenal and the Russians have downsized their arsenal of nuclear weapons. Before we start celebrating, we need to realize that all that means is instead of blowing the world up four times, we can now do it one and a half.
Right.
So it's still very dangerous.
Well, we actually had close to 70,000 nuclear weapons between us and the Russians at the height of the Cold War. 70,000 nuclear warheads that were available, or bombs. So just ridiculous overkill. And today, you know, it doesn't take that many weapons to create severe damage. You know, younger listeners may not really have a sense of the nuclear arms race that was really fever pitch back during the Cold War. But, you know, if we had gone to war, if we ever go to war, and there's enough missiles launched and bombs dropped, in addition to the hundreds of millions of people that would be killed in the first few minutes all around, you know, the world, there's going to be enough debris and soot thrown into the atmosphere that a phenomenon called nuclear winter will be created. The sun will be largely blocked out for months, some experts say up to 2 years. If you don't have sunlight, you can't grow crops, folks, and so you're going to have massive starvation worldwide until agriculture is reestablished once the atmosphere clears from all this debris and soot and so on.
Okay, we have to step away for break, Robert, and during this break, we'll hang up and reestablish contact with you. Folks, we shall return right after this.
K-Pod seat feature, and I'd like to see you in our community. It's only $6.95 per month and worth far more. I hope you will join today.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Robert Hastings during this first hour tonight. And, Robert, when we went away for break, you and I were talking about the idea that there still are plenty of nukes out there that, I mean, it's not safer. Well, it may be, it's safe, there's less overkill possible, but there's still overkill possible. And so it's still very, very dangerous. I'd like to talk about something that happened in October 2010. 50 nuclear sites, nuclear missile sites, basically we lost control of them. And they said, I read the reports again today to make sure that I understood this thing right. The official statement was that it was a computer glitch. I want to ask you if that is that the case, or was there UFO involvement in this case?
The press conference I held in Washington was on September 27th. Less than a month later, on October 23rd, at F.E. Warren Air Force Base in Cheyenne, Wyoming, the base suddenly could not communicate with 50 of its missile sites. Five missile alert facilities, which each controls 10 missiles, suddenly were unable to communicate with and therefore launch their missiles. That story was leaked. It was not voluntarily admitted. It was leaked to Atlantic Magazine, a contributing editor named Mark Ambinder. Once the cat was out of the bag, the Air Force confirmed that this did happen, that they, you know, had this incident. They did claim it was a computer issue. I immediately wondered whether there might be a UFO involvement simply because of my decades of research into these kinds of incidents. Some of the other people who were at the press conference, including Bob Salas and some of the other former launch officers and I were discussing the possibility of UFO involvement. So I basically started contacting local law enforcement, county sheriffs, in the counties where the missiles are located in the tri-state area of Wyoming, Colorado, and Nebraska, and quickly learned that there have been a number of widely separated UFO sighting reports made to these sheriffs and other police departments by civilians of UFOs near missile sites. So I quickly called, contacted one of my retired missile maintenance sources, Air Force, and he had active duty contacts at the base within probably by early December. I knew that there were sightings of a huge cigar-shaped object reported by missile maintenance teams out in the field on October 23rd and 24th. When they were out addressing this problem, they said this object looked like a World War One Zeppelin, a huge sort of cigar-shaped object, not like a commercial blimp, no passenger gondola, no writing, advertising writing on its hull. Quite clearly an anomalous aerial object. These same persons told my intermediary, this retired missile maintenance source, that their commanders, their squadron commander, had read the squadron, the riot act, that if you see things, you are not to talk to the media or to researchers about this, and very severe penalties were threatened for anybody who violated security. So in the months since then, just to finish a thought, in the months since then, I've found there have been any number of, well, over a dozen now, other reports at missile sites of smaller objects, triangles, disks, spheres, and smaller cigar-shaped craft. At my website, UFOHastings.com, I have an article posted. It's the very first one on the articles page, and people can read all of this in detail.
So I would assume from what you're telling us that you have concluded that these 50 missiles went offline as a result of UFO activity in the area.
In my view, this object probably was involved with the disruption, the communications disruption. It may be years or decades before people who actually were inside and are willing to talk in detail about that fact, you know, if indeed it did occur, it could be a long time before I meet the right person. All my research over the years has dealt with former and retired military personnel. I don't approach active duty people simply because if they talk about these kinds of things, that could be their careers, and I don't want that on my conscience. In this particular case, when I made my initial contact to this retired missile maintenance tech, he actually went out of his way to make some inquiries without my asking him to do so. Once that information was out there, though, I told him I would protect the identities of these people, but I just really felt that it's something that had to be put out there. So, all the things that have been confirmed in the documents over the years, all the things that have been reported by over 120 ex-Air Force personnel that I've interviewed are still going on today. In fact, I got the most recent report from a civilian up there within the last 2 weeks. So it's current, it's ongoing.
So they're still having UFO activity up there around these missile sites?
Correct.
Are they encountering any technical difficulties with the missiles as they did back in October?
That I have not heard. These reports come from either civilians or law enforcement personnel. They would not be in a position to know if the missiles had gone offline. There was a report, I'm from memory here, I think it was back in June, from a deputy sheriff in Kimball County who told me that he had seen this green object racing across the sky at a high rate of speed. Within 5 minutes, a missile site near his position, the security lights suddenly began flashing on and off for no apparent reason. And so you have these two events in close proximity, both geographically and in time. So it seems as if there's some potential for the UFO having caused that little issue, whatever it was. But I have not been able to access any active duty personnel that would know whether there was any, functionality issues with the missile. But, yeah, these sightings of these objects hovering above the missile sites, maneuvering above them, are just ongoing. And it's quite intriguing to me.
All right. Now, how long have you been researching this?
I started actively interviewing Air Force, former and retired Air Force personnel in 1973.
Okay, so here we are in 2011. Would you say, because you've been involved in this research now for multiple decades, would you say, as you look at the span of all of your years of investigating this or researching it, is this kind of activity increasing now or decreasing, or is it about the same level as it's always been?
I'm often asked that or variations of that question, and my response is that it's impossible to say because there's no systematic collection of data going on. If the Air Force released all of its files about every one of these cases, then you could quantify and statistically evaluate numbers of sightings, over periods of time at various locations, how many occurred here, there, during what time frame, and so on. But because the Air Force is not voluntarily talking about all this and, in fact, denies that it's going on, what I'm left with is just trying to find out, seek out and interview people who are willing to talk to me at a given base, at a given time frame when they were stationed there, and fill in a few more blanks or pieces of the puzzle. So you really can't quantify, there could be activity at a certain base and I just haven't found the right people to talk to yet, or there could be no activity at that base at all, although that doesn't seem to be the pattern. So I can only talk about the interviews that I've done, the information I've been given, but if you ask for a comprehensive overview, it's just really impossible to say with any kind of accuracy.
The official statements of the Air Force over a number of years, they have stated this many times in various ways, and that is that UFOs do not pose a national security threat to the United States of America. That's the official position. It would seem to me that if they can shut down missiles and if they can retarget missiles, and if they can start up the launch sequence on missiles, and if they are doing all of those things in variations, that would, I would think, be a national security threat.
Well, quite clearly, what the Pentagon has said officially about UFOs since the 1940s and what actually is going on behind the scenes are two entirely different things. at the very least, you know, if you were in the Pentagon or in the White House, the CIA, you really would not want to admit to your citizens that your nuclear weapons seem to be under surveillance, and from time to time their functionality is compromised. You just do not want to upset people, ruffle feathers, especially when you can't say what the intentions are of whoever are flying these things, where they come from, and so on. So you just keep your mouth shut and tell this big lie decade after decade after decade. But it's known, for example, that Project Blue Book, which supposedly was the Air Force's investigation of UFOs, it was actually a low-level group at the end of its life. It was nothing more than a public relations group. It really do a lot of investigations. But there was all this hoopla and fanfare in 1969 about it was closing down because the Air Force found no evidence that UFOs jeopardized national security. In reality, however, and we now know this from declassified documents released through the Freedom of Information Act, around the time that the PR guys telling the public no UFOs, we're not concerned, we're not interested, they're shutting down the Blue Book, an Air Force general named Carol Bolander was circulating a memorandum to every command within the Air Force. It's called the Bolander Memo. It's online. You can look it up and read it for work. He was basically saying that even though the book was closing, national security-related UFO incidents were never part of the Blue Book system, and that Air Force commands were to continue to report national security-related UFO activity to the existing channels within the Air Force. This basically verifies what I have found from my sources over the years, many of whom have told me that they were debriefed by OSI, Office of Special Investigations agents, about these very sensitive incidents. There was not any conversation with a Blue Book officer or anyone else except an OSI agent. So there's been this sleight of hand, there's been this little misdirection game that's gone on now, where officially the Air Force says, with the closure of Blue Book, we no longer investigate UFOs, when in reality, these very sensitive cases involving nuclear weapons are ongoing investigations by OSI.
Well, I don't find that surprising. But you know the statement that to the public that UFOs are not a national security threat is two things. Number one, it's an admission they exist. And number two, it's irrational. I don't think they're a national security threat, but I think they're a national security issue. And, you look, let's just replace the word UFO with Al-Qaeda. If there was an Al-Qaeda operative with a little black box with some kind of electronics in it that showed up near a nuclear missile site, flipped a few switches, and all the missiles went haywire, they'd send special forces after this guy. They'd take him out.
Well, I understand your point. Again, you know, it's the Pentagon is just never going to admit that this is going on because of the sensitivity of the issue.
All right, we have to step away for break, and we'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back, and we're talking with Robert Hastings. We were talking with Robert Hastings. We have lost Robert Hastings, apparently. We'll try to get him back on the line here. Stand by just one moment, and we'll see what we can accomplish here. And we'll see. It's ringing, at least.
You seem to be having problems tonight.
Well, yeah, the problems are always with a cell phone.
Okay.
Always. And that's we, you know, lots of people don't have anything but cell phones now.
That's me.
Yeah, but the situation is a cell phone is a radio. It's not a phone. And
right.
It's easy for it to get disrupted. Okay, we were talking about, you were saying that the Pentagon is just never going to admit that they're having these issues. So let me ask you this. Do you think that after all of these decades with the military dealing with these types of incidents, do you think that they know much more about these UFOs than the public does at this point?
Absolutely. I, you know, radar data alone, they've been collecting all over the U.S., all over the world. They know that there are objects maneuvering around the atmosphere that are orders of magnitude more sophisticated than any aircraft we have or the Russians, et cetera. So they clearly know that they're craft operated by somebody who are monitoring these weapons and tampering with them. There have been so many reports from launch officers, targeting officers, security guards, you know, for them to be, you know, they obviously know what's going on. If indeed we have one or more crashed craft, then a select number of people know that these are, in fact, piloted by beings from another world. In my book, there is a lengthy interview with a man named Chet Lytle, who worked for the Atomic Energy Commission, who had contacts with General Blanchard, who was the base commander in 1947 at Roswell Army Airfield. And these guys were lifelong friends. And according to Chet Lytle, he told me on tape that General Blanchard told him that in July 47 they did in fact recover an alien spaceship. And General Arthur Exon, who is a retired Air Force Brigadier General, has also said, for the record now, Kevin Randall interviewed him at length 20 years ago. General Exon said that Roswell did involve the recovery of an alien spacecraft. So you have some credible people saying that this is real and gone on. Therefore, the very select, very small number of people who are involved in kinds of operations, recovery and storage of these craft know that these are ET craft, in my view.
You know, what amazes me, though, is how many people are out there in the general public who believe the line of nonsense from people like Michael Shermer and Bill Nye, the nearly a science guy. They believe that line of crap from these guys over generals who have been involved with it, who say it's real.
Well, that's a sad fact. There are large numbers of people in America, especially, who their interpretation of the Bible is such that they think there's no room for alien life outside of planet Earth. A large number of people I've talked to around the country over the years believe that. Therefore, any inference that there are ETs visiting us is considered not in the Word of God. So you have that kind of religious bias in the scientific community. You have this sense of, you know, I'm a trained scientist. If this were real, I would certainly know about it. And as I mentioned in my book, I've got a whole chapter about all of the false, erroneous, illogical, invalid assumptions, presumptions, dismissive conduct on the part of scientists who've never lifted a finger to study any of the data to see whether this might be true or not. And yet, as I point out, there were people who, Jim McDonald, for example, a physicist at the University of Arizona in the 60s, dug into this, got access to Air Force files, said quite clearly there's a lot that's being swept under the rug. He tried to get the scientific community interested in looking at this. They just kind of laughed him out of his field, more or less. And he was nevertheless asked to testify before Congress in 1968, and he said, look, based on the available data, and I'm speaking as a physicist, I think these are ET craft. So there's a handful of people who actually practice science in the scientific community, but far many more simply give lip service to practicing science and pass off their own biases and ignorance of the data as scientific, you know, reasoning and behavior, which quite clearly it's not. So it's a sad situation.
I know at some time or another in your life you've been to a zoo, Have you ever seen those baboons that have the big red rears?
Just oh, sure.
Really gross-looking big red rears. That's where these establishment scientists are. That's what they look like in the face of the evidence here. They're just out there with their rear in the wind, and they act like everything's okay. They don't know anything's wrong. And, you know, the fact is they really, really, by poo-pooing the real evidence, and it is truly real evidence, but by doing that, they've become intellectual mudsuckers. So you don't have any problem, though, with the idea that these craft are extraterrestrial?
No. I mean, if you look at reports that have been generated from around the world where, let's just focus on law enforcement personnel, cops of one kind or another in many different countries all around the world, going back 50, 60 years, talking about seeing landed UFOs or low-hovering UFOs around which they could see entities, beings of one kind or another walking around. If you totally reject those reports as having any credibility, then that's your problem. But if you look at this collection of, in my view, credible reports, what is striking is that the descriptions of the beings are so diverse. You have three-footers, you have beings that are 7 feet tall, you have some that are essentially human. Their morphologies, their physical features are distinctly different from one to the other. In my view, that suggests we have multiple advanced races from elsewhere in the universe who are visiting us. I have to quickly say also that just in the last 20 years, theoretical physicists at leading universities have now for, you know, the first time since Einstein kind of came on the scene over 100 years ago, are now saying that despite what Einstein proposed, whereby nothing can achieve the speed of light, therefore, you know, alien life forms, even if they're out there, the distances are so vast they couldn't travel from their worlds to ours. All of that has now been turned on its head, and a number of physicists, over 100 peer-reviewed papers that I'm aware of in peer-reviewed journals, have been published talking about the ways that an advanced race could achieve faster than light travel. And I think, you know, we're just now cutting our teeth on the idea. We certainly don't have any empirical evidence to support that. But in 20 or 50 or 100 years, we may know how to travel faster than light. And my proposal is that some number of races in our galaxy, maybe even beyond our galaxy, have figured out all of this a long time ago, and they are getting around the universe in ways that our scientists say are impossible.
Well, Feynman out in California has said the data just has to say what the data says, whether it fits our rationality or not. And when it doesn't, then we have to change our view of rationality. And I think that's the approach that we're going to have to take. And it's the only way that makes sense.
The history of science has lots of examples where that's exactly true. Mainstream science says this can't be true, there's no way this is going to happen, etc. And one renegade or another says, no, look at it this way. And sooner or later, you know, those radicals, those revolutionaries, prove to be right, and what they say becomes the next level of mainstream science. Well, I think that's where we are with UFOs. The mainstream is just folding their arms and digging in their heels and saying, this is bull, and I'm not going to waste my time or attention.
Robert, I wish we had more time. We're out of time. I want to thank you for being with us, and I know you have to go because we only have you for the first hour, but thank you much. Ladies and gentlemen, we shall return right after this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. If I can get this all these cockpit controls under control here, we'll be fine. We had to do something a little bit different than the way we normally do it, and that is our guest could only be with us for 1 hour due to health situation. But I want to thank Robert Hastings for being with us in that first hour. Very fascinating information. Boy, I'll tell you what, he really nailed it down, didn't he? General Blanchard was Colonel Blanchard in charge of the air base there at Roswell at the time of the Roswell crash. And later, as General Blanchard retired, admitted that an alien spacecraft had been recovered. General Exxon, and I've seen General Exxon's taped interview, General Exxon says it's real. Absolutely nails it down, and there are people still running around asking the stupidest question you can ask, and that is, do you believe in UFOs? That's really an ignorant question. That's like asking if you believe in pencils. I mean, either they exist or they don't. There's nothing to believe. If they exist, they exist. If they don't, they don't. There's no faith involved here. So what does the evidence say? The evidence and the very highest credibility of evidence says they're real. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to go open line for the rest of the show tonight. And I've got a few things I'll throw on the table, but the phone lines are open now. You don't have to wait till I get through. If you've got something within our genre that you would like to talk about, and the genre is anything UFO, paranormal, any extraterrestrial, any of that kind of stuff, let's talk about it. Whatever it is that you would like to talk about. Let me start off by saying the new members community is going to roll out here in a couple of weeks. Members who join on a monthly basis right now are paying $6.95 a month. That's 23 cents a day. It's going up. We're going to have our first rate increase ever in the members area, and it's going to go to $7.50 a month. But you can lock in $6.95 for the next year if you join before we roll that out. So you can join for $6.95, and then each month, you know, your credit card or your debit card is charged $6.95 for the next year. If you wait, it's still going to be a great deal. But it will be $7.50 a month. And well worth it, because you're going to be able to do all of the things you can now. That's, you know, in the members area, which will become the members community. It's not just a name change. It is a structural change as well. But that's where the archives are. They're called K-Pods. Now, at the end of 2007, early 2008... we were using iPowerWeb as our hosting company. They made a decision that they weren't going to allow MP3s on their site. They wiped out our archives. After telling me that since I own those, there's no copyright infringements, that we could, they said that we could keep them, they disappeared. So our archives, we lost everything. But the archives that we have now go back to 2008 because we switched companies like 2 days after that. And we never looked back and never will. But anyway, our archives are there in the members area. You get to watch the show. And if you miss the live show, we upload the captured video of the live show. for 24 hours. So you have 24 hours in which to catch the show. And then we're adding, you know, we've already got the chat room. We've got forums. That's going to be there. Everything that's already there. We have a library full of free e-books that you can download. And we've got a whole bunch more that we're going to add to the new members community, more e-books that we're going to put in there. But there's a bunch in there now that you can download. They're yours for free. We have the Video Galaxy. That's some videos. Some of those are past shows. Some of those are not shows at all. And it's other things, videos of interest in the Video Galaxy for you to watch. That's going to be there. And plus, we already have friends page, but now you're going to be able to send a friend request, and people can decide whether to accept or reject you as a friend. Now, if you send a friend request and they accept you, it adds you to them as a friend and them to you as a friend, just like at Facebook. And then, let's see, what else? Oh, yeah. We have a new video sharing feature. So if you go out there and you shoot a UFO on video, or you get a ghost on video, or you've got something you want to share with the community, you can upload your video for all the other folks to see. How about that? All right. So that's a new feature, and that works. I've been trying to get that to work for a year and a half with the software that we currently have, and I'm told it can happen. I'm told you can do it. I haven't figured out how to make it happen. With this new software, that's the first thing I tackled, and that's done. It works. Okay, you can stick a fork in that one. It's done. And so video sharing is there. You need to be a member, because as a member, yes, we benefit from it financially, because it helps us pay the light bills and the bandwidth bills, the server bills, software bills. Just that software alone was $500. Okay, so, you know, yeah, it helps us to remain in business and to be here to broadcast the next night. That's true. But look what you get for it, and it's not expensive. Right now it's 23 cents a day. 23 cents. Well, it's your choice. If you want to lock it in for the next year at 23 cents, that's the way to do it. And once we roll this out so that people we'll be signing up for the new members community. Once we do that, it's not 23 cents a day. It's not going to be expensive. It's $7.50 a month instead of $6.95. But you could save yourself a little money by acting right now. Solar flares are a big, big deal. The solar flares are always something that we have to take an interest in. We've always got to pay attention to solar flares. We have a lot of satellites out in space, you know. Lots and lots of satellites. Not just American satellites, although America's got a bunch of satellites out there. Military, scientific, business and communication satellites. We've got lots of them, but it's not just us. Virtually every developed country on the planet has at least one satellite out there, and most of them have a fleet of satellites out there. Well, solar flares happen. They happen frequently. They happen all the time. It's rare when we go through a long period of time without solar flares. It happens. And you get these coronal mass ejections from the big ones. And when that happens, radiation, I mean really, really hot radiation, and I'm not talking about temperature-wise as much as I'm talking about radioactivity-wise, high radiation, heads out through the solar system in one direction or another, and it is cooking. It's 93 million miles, roughly, from the Earth to the Sun, from the Sun to the Earth. 93 million miles. It takes the light from the Sun approximately 8 minutes to arrive on Earth. So if the Sun goes out, you're okay for the next 8 minutes. You won't know it. The instant you know that the Sun went out, you're 8 minutes late already. It takes 8 minutes for it to get here. Well, these solar flares are not traveling at the speed of light, but they are moving because they cross that 94 million miles in 3 to 4 days. Now, imagine that. And so people are quite concerned, scientists and businesses, the military, all concerned in every country that's got satellites up there, because when there is a solar flare, sometimes it's headed right for some of their satellites. And they don't want the satellite to basically be cooked. They don't want it to be damaged by the radiation coming toward it. So sometimes they're able to avoid it, that by moving to a little bit higher or lower orbit, or by turning the satellite in a different direction so that its sensitive sensors and panels don't get baked by the oncoming storm of radiation. So it's always something that, as I say, scientists and businesses and militaries are concerned about. Well, on August the 4th, there was a pretty significant event, and that is a couple of solar flares, one of them pretty significant. And those who are watching tonight can see a picture of where this solar flare originated. Now, you might be saying, well, it originated on the Sun. Yeah, it did. But we're looking at the region on the Sun where this eruption came from. And it's not headed directly at the Earth, but it is headed in our general direction. Arriving, they suspect, today. And they put out a warning that, as a matter of fact, there may be an ensuing electromagnetic storm that could fry the grids in some places here on Earth. They also put this warning out for those who have satellites up there, because this is strong enough and headed this direction, not a direct hit, but enough that there's some tension, some anxiety about the safety of the satellites. They were saying some communication satellites and some GPS satellites could become dysfunctional. And they also put the warning out to grid operators, for those who are in the business of manufacturing and supplying electricity, and they do it across what we call the grid. Well, they've put warnings out for the grid operators as well. And I don't know really what you can turn a satellite a different direction, but you can't turn a power plant a different direction. You can't turn the grid a different direction. I don't know really what the grid operators could do other than to just shut down some of their stuff and try to make sure it doesn't get fried, make sure it doesn't get burned up. Now, this warning did not say this will happen, that we will see these effects from the solar flares, but they were saying that there is a chance because of the strength and direction of this solar flare back on August the 4th. So, if sometime tonight or this week it becomes impossible for you to hear the show, it may be magnetic storm, this electromagnetic storm that we're about to be enveloped in, and it may already be beginning as I speak to you. In fact, I thought about that when Robert Hastings was having trouble with his telephone. You see, a cell phone, and we try to get people not to use cell phones, but so many people like Robert, that's the only thing they have now. They don't have anything but cell phones. But a cell phone is not a phone. It is a radio. It interfaces with the telephone system, but it is a radio. And what do you think cell towers are? What do you think the problem is when you say, well, I don't have coverage here? Well, what you're saying is you're not standing close enough to your cell phone company's repeater tower, the cell tower. And so your little radio that you're holding in your hand that you think is a telephone is not strong enough to hit their nearest tower. It's a radio. Well, those very often are relying on communications satellites. That's one of the ways that cell phone conversations are carried across the country and around the world, is through communications satellites, which that's radio too. So that may have been what's behind the breakup. You could hear the breakup in the conversation, in the audio from his phone. One minute it sounded great, next minute it's breaking up. That can be caused by what we're talking about, what I'm talking about right now. So you may experience some cell phone problems because they are radios. And so you may be experiencing some of that over the next few days as well. See, the point of all this is this. The things we talk about on this show, some people out there, not too many people in our audience, of course, but around the world, some people think, oh, that's crazy stuff, you know. Why don't these people get their head out of the clouds? Why don't these people get their feet back on the ground and join the real world? Well, it's the stuff we talk about that's affecting the real world. It is the real world. The stuff we talk about here on this show that some people think is too flighty, too out on the edge, too strange, too weird. Well, I got to tell you something. This stuff gets down in your tennis shoes and walks with you every day. It has an impact on our lives every single day. It isn't crazy stuff. It's real stuff. And we have a, pardon me, we have a real caller right now. So let's go to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi, Brent.
I'm glad to know I'm a real caller.
I wouldn't have said that, Brent, had I known who it was.
Thank you. Let's put it this way. When towards the end of Robert's interview, It occurred to me that there is such a thing as willful ignorance.
On whose part? On his part? I don't think he is.
No, and I'm talking about the people who deny everything he says. They say,
oh, yeah.
This can't happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's just willful ignorance.
Yeah, and I think on the part of some of the debunkers, it's beyond willful ignorance, and really what you're into at that point is bold-faced lies for a lot of them.
Blatant stupidity.
Yeah, well, I guess if I were to tell someone, you know, you've heard me use this example, and you've heard me use the example of a bat with a 6-foot wingspan. Now, when I first started talking about that, I did get a couple of emails, this was years ago, from people who said, oh, come on, you're asking us to believe the impossible now. But you've seen, because I know you watch the show, and you have seen the video clip that I played where I show you one of those in flight. Okay, they are very real. All right, so what we have with debunkers is we have a situation, if we take their logic about UFOs, it's not logic, but if we take their line of argument against UFOs and apply it to that video clip of that bat with a 6-foot wingspan, you would have to say, it's a Chinese wedding candle. It's not a bat. Or it was a flare being dropped by the Maryland National Guard who had wandered over into Indonesia. Or you would have to say it's a lens flare, you know. But I've been up close and personal with these bats, and they are used as a food source in East Timor. I have eaten these bats. Okay. There's no possibility that you're going to convince me, no matter how often you tell it. There's no way to tell me that they don't exist. I know they exist. It's not even a question. I know they exist. But if we take that same line of reasoning that they use and apply it to this bat, how successful would it be to go into these areas where people raise them and use them for food, and they see them all the time, 6-foot wingspan? How good would the UFO arguments work? How well would they work in convincing these natives that these bats don't exist?
Yeah, it's kind of like the FU lizard.
That exists too.
I know.
I found on the internet, I found an MP3 file of a recording of one of them. Mm-hmm. I wish I could play it on the air. Even though this thing is not a human and it's not using human speech, it sounds exactly like what I've said. And we would all, everybody involved in the Kevin Smith Show and broadcasting the Kevin Smith Show, the affiliates, everybody, we'd be in trouble with the FCC. And it's a lizard. It's a lizard. Mm-hmm. But he screams, F you! And it sounds just like a human, only he doesn't say F. And he says the word, but that's their call. That's their, and it's just an animal, but that's his call.
It's a mating call.
I'll tell you something else. In Vietnam, they have a re-up bird.
A re-up bird?
Re-up.
Oh, re-up? Oh,
yeah. It walks around at night and says, re-up, re-up. It's true. They really have it.
Didn't like that one.
Yeah. Well, they really have that. So you're right. There are lots of people out there that are willfully stupid.
Yeah. One of the things I was going to comment about is this summer we've had a lot of power blinks for no apparent reason.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this has anything to do with solar flares, but...
Brent, we have a break taking over. Hang on, I want to talk to you about that. We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away.
Pick Virginia, and you are smart because you are listening to the Kevin Smith Show.
All right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And we have on the telephone with us Brent. So, Brent, I had to cut you off right there as we went to break. And I don't like to cut people off. We just have to do it sometimes. So the floor is yours. You were saying?
Well, once in a while in the summer when it's really hot, I mean, well over 100, 105 degrees or so, we'll have a power blink. It'll go on and off real quick.
Yeah.
But this summer we've had several of them. I mean, it's gone on, gone off for several minutes and then come back on. But we haven't had a day over 100 degrees yet. I don't know what, if it's the solar flares or what, so it happens.
I was going to ask, what do you think's causing it, but you answered that.
I honestly don't know.
Yeah. Well, we live in interesting times, Sir Brent.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for the call.
Yep. Goodbye.
The telephone lines are open. As I said, we're going to do the rest of this show as open line. 623-444-5889. If you're in the USA or Canada, the number, again, 623-444-5889. Now, that number will work from anywhere in the world. Anywhere. But it is expensive to make an international long-distance call. So for people not in the United States and not in Canada, we have the flash message option open for you on the website. Simply go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and when you find that picture, look right above it. There's a link for flash messages. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, this is Mike from Kentucky.
Hello, Mike.
How you doing tonight?
Doing well, sir. How are you?
Very well. Enjoyed Robert Hastings. Interesting interview.
Yeah, he always is. Very knowledgeable person.
Yes. Well, when you take part in something that's part of it, you usually know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. You should.
Yes, you should.
Mm-hmm.
Even though others try to tell you, you don't.
That's right.
That's what psychiatrists are for. They tell you that you don't know what you saw or felt or heard.
Well, that's what the all of the official spin doctor spokesmen are for, too.
Exactly.
To tell you a cow is a Cadillac.
Did you happen by any chance to watch the show last night, Curiosity?
No, I don't watch television.
Well, on Curiosity, the question was, did God create the universe? And Dr. Stephen Hawking was the one that hosted that, I guess you would say. And it started with, you know, the history of how people in the early 3rd, 4th centuries found out that the sun, you know, revolved around the earth instead of the earth around the sun and all of that. And then they went to the point of back to demonstrate the Big Bang and so forth and so forth, and they kept asking, where's God in all this? Where's God in all this? And then they took it backwards, all the way back to the Big Bang, and at which there was zero, and they said, well, where's God in all this? Because there is no time, so there is no movement, so there is no creation. But why is it that they think in terms of three-dimensional physical reality? Who says that there has to be three-dimensional consciousness, that there's not a consciousness that supersedes all realities? And they're overlooking that because they're physical scientists.
Well, yes, but look, the Big Bang is but a theory, and one of the things that these scientists taught me when I was in school, right up to and including university, is, and they would laugh at the ancient people who believed in spontaneous generation. You know, if you throw some wet rags and some wheat in the cellar, it generates mice. That's where mice come from. That's what right. They thought. And they laugh at that. And they would say it is a physical law that you can't get something from nothing. Then, how do you explain the Big Bang? Now, there is a problem, and the problem is called the Doppler effect. And when you trace radiation back as far as you can, whether we're talking about radioactivity or if we're talking about light or heat, any kind of radiation, you trace it back as far as you can, you've gotten as far back as Doppler effect will allow you to go. Now, if you could position yourself right now, you're on Earth, and you're looking back 14 billion light years. Okay, and at that point, it zeroes out. So you say, okay, that's where the Big Bang was. Well, if you could position yourself 7 billion light years closer, it is possible that your radiation measurements would go another 7 billion beyond where you were. You see what I'm saying? Because of the Doppler effect, it fades off with distance. That's why when we hear a siren coming, it sounds like it's getting louder as it approaches us, and then as it passes us and moves away, it sounds as if it's getting quieter. But in fact, sitting right there in the car, and I where the siren is, and I know about this, that volume is constant.
Exactly.
Okay, but that's the Doppler effect. So if we could move 7 billion light years closer to that zero point, I'm betting the zero point will move 7 billion light years further away.
It sounds logical, but here again, it's only a theory. But the thing is that they were trying to totally do away with intelligent design here. It's all just a fluke of everything together.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's Stephen Hawking. He says, I see no reason to believe in a God to create anything.
That's fine. That's why I don't deal with belief.
Exactly. He was talking the whole thing was talking about if you don't believe in God, then you don't have to worry about survival of after death. You don't have to worry about reincarnation. You don't have to worry about any of these things.
No, you don't, unless they are real. And exactly. See, here's the thing. Belief doesn't change reality. It changes your experience with that reality. But it doesn't change reality. And so if those things are real and you choose not to believe in them, it doesn't make them go away.
I like to say that if a thing is, it is.
That's it.
Your belief is not, or disbelief is not going to change it one way or the other.
Whatever is, is.
Exactly.
And, And people, sometimes you've been listening to this show a number of years, and I know you've heard callers over the years who have challenged me on, beliefs are important and feelings are important and blah, blah, blah. And I've said over and over, sure they are. My kids are important. They're so important, I don't let them drive the car.
Right.
Children don't drive the car because those children are important. And feelings are important, but they can't drive your life. If you let them drive, it's going to be like a child driving the car. You're going to wreck. Same thing with beliefs. But see, people do let beliefs drive their life, and they even allow it to drive their thought processes related to data.
Yes, to a frenzy even.
Yeah, and I like what Feynman said, Dr. Feynman out in, I think he's at, where is he, UCLA? Anyway, he's out in California. And Dr. Feynman has said, look, the data says what the data says. What we have to do is we have to let the data say whatever it says, even if it flies in the face of our theory, if it flies in the face of our belief, then we have to change our theory and we have to change our belief in order to fit the data. And so I like that. He said, and real scientists do that. He said, that's what the work of real science is. Well, he's right, but that's rare.
Yes, but basically that's what Stephen Hawking was saying about this this topic last night was, we've got the data, and we have to let it speak for itself. But he only goes to a zero point. He doesn't ask. He doesn't really question. He actually says there's nothing before zero point. There is nothing. So he's accepting the idea that there is no consciousness of any kind prior to that.
Well, it takes more faith for me to believe that at zero point, where there is nothing, that nothing exploded and there was something. It takes more faith to believe that than to think that perhaps that's really not zero point and that there is no zero point.
Right.
I heard a good explanation. Now, this doesn't necessarily argue that there is God, but there are some kind of intelligent principles, at least, which, of course, suggests some type of consciousness, that underlie all of the physics of the universe. And I saw this on a documentary that we showed on Sunday evening here on our TV channel. And I thought it was good. And it goes like this. Consider the human eye. And believing that the human eye somehow developed from millions and billions of just random chance mutations. And he said, that's something like taking a gigantic warehouse, put all of the parts that it takes to build a 747 in there. And then just think that you can hit it with an infinite number of tornadoes, and one of them is going to create a 747.
Right.
It's not going to happen, and neither did any type. Neither does any type of creation without some sort of underlying operating intelligence. Now, some people want to say that means God. Okay. Some people want to say that means some type of impersonal cosmic consciousness. Okay. I don't know what to call it. I can just see evidence of it.
Well, you know, people need something to make them stable within their own skin. I get it. I accept it, so I don't argue. But what mystics like to say is the God of my heart and the God of my understanding. And let it go at that.
Well, all of us can only guess. Some people say, I'm not guessing, I know. Okay. They don't know. They believe.
No, if you don't, you guess.
Yeah, well, if you know, you don't believe. If you know, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mike, we have a break coming up. I got to run.
Believe he knows.
I got to run. We got a break coming up.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, if you know, then you don't need to believe. What is there to believe when you know? I know I'm holding a pen in my hand. I don't have to believe I am. I know I am. I can hold it. I can feel it. I can write with it. I don't have to believe it's there. It's there. Furthermore, those who are watching our TV can see it. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we've only got about, just a few minutes left in this flight of the KSS Starship. We have time for one, maybe two calls, if you call right now, 623-444-5889. you know, with the Doppler theory of the apparent increase in energy and then decrease in energy as something approaches you and then goes away. So an increase in volume of a siren as it comes toward you and then decrease as it goes away from you. And yet the actual volume remains the same. Well, with that Doppler theory, there is sort of a sub-theory, and that is that consciousness came through this part of the universe. And so you had this increasing, sudden increase in the apparent intelligence of things and intelligent design, and then it trails off in both directions. So that in looking for zero point, anywhere you look, because energy generally is pretty much a sphere, any direction you look, you're looking at a decrease. The high point for us is where we are, but the high point somewhere else is where they are. Kind of hard to wrap your mind around that one. But in any direction that you look with your instruments, it's going to appear to decrease with distance, with light years, because of the Doppler effect. I'm not saying that I think that theory. I'm not saying I think that theory is accurate, but it's interesting, and I certainly could buy into that a lot easier than I can something from nothing, and that's what the Big Bang is. Nobody was there. Nobody recorded this Big Bang. There's no actual evidence of the Big Bang. There's evidence of the theory. Nobody recorded it. Nobody saw it. And so if you believe the Big Bang, okay, that's all right. As long as you understand, that's religion. That's faith. Just like the people who say they believe in God. And their Bible says, God said, let there be light. And they believe that. Well, there's nothing more incredible about believing that than there is about believing something from nothing. Big Bang. Both of those require faith. They're both religious. It's just that the scientists hate to admit that it's their religion. It is religion. There's no more evidence for that than there is for what the Christians and the Jews say, what the Muslims say about how the world came to be, what the Buddhists say about how the world came to be. Nobody was there. So if you buy any of those theories, and you say, this is the one I believe, okay, no problem. That's faith. It's not science. That's faith. And there's nothing wrong with faith, but call it what it is. Look, you don't give vodka to a baby. You don't look at the vodka and say, okay, well, that's milk. I'm going to give it to the baby. Because no matter how long you call it milk, it's still vodka. So you can't take something for which there's no proof and say that's science. And no matter how long you call it science and you beat your chest and scream that it's science, it doesn't turn that into science any more than believing vodka is milk turns it into milk. It's the same thing. Faith is faith. And again, I don't have any people that say they believe the Big Bang Theory. Okay. Not a problem. Just don't beat your chest and tell me that's science. That's faith. People that believe Darwin's theory of evolution. Okay. Just don't beat your chest and say that's science. People will say, well, that's what the majority of scientists have determined is how it happened. So, you know, the majority of Catholics have determined the Pope is a legitimate representative of Christ. The majority of Protestants have determined he's not. You're still dealing when you're dealing with these theories of science, you're dealing with theory. It's not fact, it's theory. And it's okay if you want to believe a theory. Identify it for what it is and be honest about it. It is a belief, and it is therefore faith. The word belief and the word faith come from the same, come to English through the same channels. And it traces back to a Greek word, pistuo. This word can be used as a noun. The same word can be used as a noun. It can be used as a verb. But in English, we don't say, I'm faithing this. We say, I am believing this. But it comes from the same word. In the original Greek, you would use the same word, pistuo, and change the endings on it. So you can say, I have faith, or you could say, I am faithing. But we don't do that in English. In English, we say, I believe, or I have faith. It's the same word. I've had people argue with me and tell me that belief and faith are not the same. Yeah, they are. They most definitely freaking are exactly the same. There's nothing wrong with belief if you identify it as a belief. There's nothing wrong with it. And those who have seen my seminar called Gods in the Garden have seen me say that between the two groups, one group is more honest about their position. You have the religious group on one side saying they believe that the earth and creation and everything happened like it says in Genesis. On the other side, you have the scientists who generally follow the Big Bang theory and then evolution. But the two groups are more different in their outcome. The outcome on the science side, they say this is based on scientific evidence. And on the religious side, they say this is belief, it's faith. Well, on the religious side, they're more honest because they're saying it's a belief. On the science side, you guys need to come off of it. Jeez, who died and made you God that you don't believe in? It is a belief. And that's okay, but be honest about that. Be honest about the fact that it's a belief. You used to believe that there were no planets outside of this solar system until 1995. That's what you were teaching, and you were writing books and getting doctor's degrees based on that. Well, what are you going to do now? There's 550 confirmed planets outside of our solar system that confirmed as having been discovered. There is another 1,237 in the process of being confirmed now. Over 1,700 planets outside the solar system, and they were out there way back then when you were saying you knew they weren't. So what we know is that you didn't know, you believed, and you were wrong. Okay, that's okay. That's what science is about. Science is about thinking this might be possible, that might be possible, doing experiments to see if it's possible, finding out that what we thought was possible isn't, so we were wrong. What we thought was impossible is, so we were wrong, and we adjust. And then we move on and try to make new discoveries. That's the way science is supposed to work. It's a belief, though, when we're talking about the Big Bang Theory. Okay, it's been fun. It's been interesting. I hope that you enjoyed it. And I hope you'll join us for tomorrow night's show. I hope you'll join us each night this week. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.